The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On the last two programs, we have been reviewing a little bit about how we got to the point where we are immediately. A number of programs ago, we, as a part of a discussion of objections to the notion of evolution, we were discussing gaps that have no connections, nothing to something, inorganic to organic, plants to animals, etc. And we have been for a number of programs discussing the variety of animals. We have gone through 8 of the 10 major animal phyla, starting with protozoa. There are 2 left after the echinoderms. One of these, of course, are the arthropods, and this would be a place we could spend years, and that is not my intent. And the other, of course, are the vertebrate animals, those that have bones. And we'll hopefully judiciously present information about those without causing the interest of the listeners to lag. So we've been talking about these gaps. There is one other notion that I think I would like to remind listeners of. Why have these programs? Why go to the trouble of recording and then handling the tapes to the point where DVDs or whatever can be sent out to radio stations, and they spend their time airing all of this? And I think it might be helpful for those of you who are listening to understand my thoughts about this. Why the idea of Bible science to start with? And my basic motive here is simply to establish that there really is no conflict between real science and the Scripture. Now, in the early programs, we spent some time talking about the difference between science and scientism. And I emphasized at that time that real science can only deal with those things that have been perceived by human beings. It requires the presence of a warm body to gather information. And anything that does not allow that isn't science. I suggested at that time 2 questions for those of you who are either reading about something which is supposed to be science in a textbook or whatever, or you're listening to some oral presentation of something that's supposed to be science. The first question is simply to ask yourself, was that person there? Was the author there, or that person who is doing the presentation, present in order that he could use his senses to perceive whatever it is he's talking about? And if the answer to that question is no, then ask yourself a second question. Was anybody else there? Was it possible for another human being to be there and gather the information, and this person is simply rehearsing or reflecting the observations of the other person? And if the answer to that question is no, then you can be assured you're not listening to science. And I have reminded you often, even in the last 2 programs, that it is not possible for us to have any scientific information about those gaps that we have been talking about. Now, we've talked at great length about the idea that there simply are no reproductive links that could exist between organisms in one phylum and another. For example, there is no reproductive link between protozoans and sponges, or between sponges and jellyfish, or jellyfish and flatworms, and so on. Now, we have talked briefly before about how far down the ladder of classification does this go. We have been talking, and we'll continue to talk about the echinoderms. There are 5 major classes of organisms in the echinoderms. Are there reproductive links between starfish and brittle stars, or sand dollars, or the other organisms? And as we'll look at the characteristics there, there are similar ones, but there are a very different arrangement of these things, even within organisms in the classes. And I do not know of any creationist who would seriously attempt to provide reproductive links between organisms in different classes in a given phylum. I do not know of any creationists who would seriously attempt to provide links between organisms in different orders within the classes. Now, when we get down to families, there is a little bit different answer to that, and we have talked about it. I'm not intending to pursue that with you now. But there are some limitations. I've made the comment on occasion that what the evolutionist really is looking for is some kind of an organism which is one thing rather than something else. A flatworm rather than a bumblebee or whatever. But that organism has the capability of being everything else. Now, that is a desirable organism for the evolutionist, but the fact is they simply don't exist. Organisms are different. There is a reason they are different, and there is a reason or reasons that they cannot be everything else at the time they're one thing. And this is a reasonably simple notion, but I think it's one that evolutionists have not really wrestled with, and their answer generally is to decide that somewhere in the fog of millions and billions of years, that isn't a problem any longer. And we've talked about that at some length, and those of you that have listened for a period of time, I think, perhaps will recall that. So we have real science, on the one hand, dependent on factual information gathered by individuals. When we sit down and talk about the characteristics of a starfish, the water vascular system, the pedicellaria, or whatever, we're talking about those things that people have and can use their senses on and derive information, as opposed to what I have referred to in the past as scientism. Now, I have defined, or did define, scientism for you as holding a view which is unwarranted on the basis of facts. While human beings are capable of gathering facts, human beings are also capable of thinking about, imagining, rationalizing about those facts. And granted, it is sometimes a little difficult to draw sharp lines here. You go into the laboratory and carry out a series of experiments, and you derive certain factual information, and then it is simply human nature to begin to try and make connections between the factual information that you have observed in the laboratory and the factual information that somebody else has observed in the laboratory. And within some limits, this is perfectly reasonable, and it's certainly an acceptable part of what science is. But when that reasoning goes beyond the bounds of reasonable connections between the factual data, or wandering off into an area where there really isn't any factual data, then you have edged off into scientism, what I have sometimes referred to as Alice in Wonderland. And when you get into that area, there really are not any limitations on the conclusions you can come to. This is why, contrary to some people's ideas, evolution can provide an answer to anything, because there are not the restrictions of factual information about it. You can draw connections between almost anything you want to if you work at it long enough. On a program a long time ago, I made the comment. Some have made the observation that the human mind is capable of making a heaven of hell or a hell of heaven. Now, I'm not sure I would go quite that far, but the point is the human mind is capable of unbelievable rationalization. And particularly if intelligent people work at rationalizing a particular view long enough, they can rationalize the most unbelievable connections, when to an average person, they would simply accept this as being impossible. And I think these comments are very important when we're considering the idea of evolution, for some of the reasons that we have reviewed in recent programs, as well as for some others. So if you get to the point where you can distinguish between science, that position which is based on human perceptions and reasonable conclusions about it, and scientism, that which the scripture refers to as science falsely so-called, where there are connections that are being made that simply are not possible or that are unreasonable. If you can distinguish between these two kinds of things, then you're in a good position to be able to begin to make some judgments about science and that which is not science. And the whole point of this discussion I'm having with you is simply to help you to understand that when science is used as a basis of rejecting Scripture, it is simply misusing science. And real science can't do that. Scientism is the basis of those statements that men use to try and reject Scripture. And my comment has been on occasion, if you don't want to believe the Bible, don't believe it. Believe anything you want to. But don't try and use science, true science, as a basis of rejecting Scripture. Because true science will have exactly the opposite effect. And for centuries, this was precisely what we observed in the scientific field. You go back into the 1800s and read the scientific papers there, and often you would find the author going through a rather lengthy discussion of recounting how he gathered certain facts and conclusions. And then his statement would be that all of this is simply testimony to the intelligence of a creator. So for centuries, that was the end of true science, that science was simply used to point to God as creator. And when we were talking about evolutionary theories, Darwin's theory of evolution, of natural selection, and de Vries' theory of use of mutations, and the theory of use and disuse, all of those, at the time when those things began to be popularized, then there was a drift away from using science, or using is probably not quite the right word here, science occupying that position of simply reinforcing the idea of a creator, toward the misuse of science, to use it in an effort to try and reject or refuse or vilify the idea that the order and pattern in nature is a reflection of an intelligent creator, and to use that same the scientism of that to argue that science can be used to refute the idea of God and creation. Now, I hope my comments to you are done in such a way that you will be able to recognize the difference between science and scientism, and that you will understand the proper uses of these, and that science itself simply may not be used. Real science may not be used to reject creation. Again, if you don't want to believe it, don't believe it. But don't try and use science as the basis for that rejection.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.